It's now time for Just the Terror with Nick Guerra.
The kid. I was jolted awake about an hour ago. My sheets were soaked in sweat. My heart was pounding. I was confused and disoriented. What exactly frightened me? The absolute certainty that some slavering, malevolent horror was in my trailer with me, creeping up on me while I slept with poised claws and razor teeth. My mouth was coated with a metallic taste of fear, sour, dry, and thick. I grabbed the baseball bat that lays beneath my cot, tiptoed around the cramped darkness of my trailer, straining to hear over the keening of the wind outside and the pounding of my own heart. Of course, there was nothing here except my goldfish and yours truly, a sweaty guy in his underwear. It was the gusting wind that startled me awake. It happens quite often in the late autumn and early winter. The wind rips through the scrub of skeletal trees that surround the trailer park and with a lion's roar charges into our lonely huddle of frail little shelters. It gibbers and shrieks and pounds on our walls with fists of dead leaves and frozen grit. After catching my breath and finally satisfied that I wasn't about to become chow for some unspeakable creature, I lay back down on my squeaky, saggy old cot. Tried to get back to sleep, but I couldn't. Instead, memories began creeping in. When this happens, you hope for the better ones. But let's be real. Better memories take some work on your part. Meanwhile, darker memories just creep in and leave the door open. And the howling winds that night had awoken memories from the time I spent in the penitentiary. When I first came to the pen, the thing that struck me the most about the place was just how much the convicts talk. In the county jail, there had been talk, sure, but it was terse and impersonal. When only serving a few months, I guess a lot of people feel the situation's too temporary to bother forging any ties with their fellow inmates. In county, you'd play cards with your cellie, or you'd sit in the day room and watch TV in relative silence. Going in, you just hope that the food wouldn't be too bad. You just hope that your cellie wouldn't end up being a gang member or a meth head biker who might beat the snot out of you as a way to pass the hours. In county, fights were the only thing that passed as excitement. Every other moment of the day was dull, boring nothings. The pen, though. I got a 4-year sentence for armed robbery. I remember very clearly the moment when my little group of new arrivals were let out of the fish tank, into our new home, a pod housing 200 inmates. I was overwhelmed by the deafening din of voices and activity when the guard, the hacks, marched us out onto the range, bundles in hand. Outside of the obligatory cat calls and wolf whistling, it felt like most of the convicts were completely oblivious to us, as if they were too busy living the ebb and flow of penitentiary life. Of course, this was not actually true. Cons see everything, and the pen is in an incredibly noisy, smelly, vocal environment. Convicts played cards, betting with tobacco bales purchased from the commissary and individual hand-rolled smokes. Daddies took their sugar boys into rented cells or the showers and got some while a homeboy held watch for the cops. Dope fiends spiked what they liked to spike in the bathrooms. Tensions were always high between the rival gangs. And lots of talk. Talk of family back home, women had and lost, of misdeeds proudly done. There were enough stories flying around that place to fill a library. But new arrivals weren't just welcomed with open arms, quite the opposite. My first cellie was a big, tough old bull, and he made it known that he wanted both my bail and my backside in that order. That wasn't happening. I hammered him in the mouth and it was on. The fight spilled out of the cell and into the corridor of the pod. Before the COs got to us, I managed to get him down onto the floor and was whamming away on the back of his head and neck like a jackhammer. I had him leaking and his confidence was shaken. Then the hacks got there, and one of them laid a size 12 boot upside my skull. The kick knocked my brain clear over the moon. The world immediately went out of focus, and it stayed that way for almost 12 hours. I spent the next 3 weeks in the hole for fighting, When I got out, I was placed in a different pod. Word had got around that this fish wasn't exactly new, and that I had a mean right cross. No one bothered to try and roll up on me in the yard that day. When I sat down at chow with my new celly, Mikey, and some of his boys, no one objected. I'd been checked, and I passed the test. I wasn't a punk or a sissy. I could sit with the men. I'd get to know as much about these men as they let me know. I knew I was only in for 4 years, and I had no plans on getting into everyone's business. I figured the less I knew about everyone, maybe better in the long run. I found a good group to be associated with thanks to being placed in with Mikey. He may be the one I learned about the most. Mikey was an old con, a good cat all in all, straight shooter who didn't mess with the spike. The thing was, if he got it into his head that he wanted to, he'd kill just about anyone. In earlier years, Mikey had been a trigger man for the bikers. He had been convicted for the murders of 6 people, was a suspect in 16 others. And I can well imagine that a number of them had probably been friends of his at one point or another. In certain circles, a good friend can become your murderer in the blink of an eye. Mikey's original sentence started at 15 years. But he had gotten into so much trouble since landing in the pen, he managed to acquire an additional 10 years on top of that. Mikey was doing all day, and he'd made peace with that fact. The other guys in Mikey's crew were Big Rob Hutch, Coltrane, Remy, Nicky, and Richie. All part of the crew for different reasons. Mikey and Coltrane were the most important guys in our pod. Coltrane was an older convict. By the time I was in, it was assumed everyone knew what Coltrane's crimes were, so no one really asked. Big Rob Hutch was a solid man, with his ear to the ground, big as a buffalo, and the first to know many things. Big Rob didn't find crime. Crime found him. Nicky was the youngest in the crew, and a first-timer for the prison system. His sentence was pretty strong for a first-timer, 15 years, 8 before he'd be considered for parole. If you asked Nicky, he'd jokingly say his crime was family business. Fortunately for Nicky, his uncle was serving time in the same facility. His uncle was an upper echelon Hell's Angel who rolled both B-Pod and C-Pod with an iron fist. Per his uncle's orders, Mikey and Coltrane had personally welcomed the kid into the crew. As a result, Nicky was going to get the easiest ride a first-timer to the pen ever had. Nicky was fresh-faced and physically soft. A few months ago, he celebrated his 20th birthday. I occasionally wonder if he'd ever really known just how bad it could have been for him in there. Richie was doing 6 years for selling pills, the sentence for a second-time loser. Oxycontin and hydrocodone were his chemicals of choice. And his career didn't end once he ended up in the pen. He could get his hands on whatever the crew needed. And Remy? Well, Remy was Coltrane's. That was his role in the crew. His first year in, Remy, a little Frenchman, was just another cell block punk, a weaker inmate that traded what he had to trade in order to get by in a world dominated by strength. In fact, Coltrane was the one who turned Remy out in the first place. But Remy's story didn't end with him being subservient. After a year or so, he'd finally stopped just playing the part of a woman and began living it. Remy began taking illicit female hormones. Her arm hair had thinned out, and it seemed that she had recently grown the suggestion of breasts beneath her orange jumpsuit. By the time I got out of the pen, Remy had changed her name to Rhianne. Rhianne was known for causing savage fights amongst inmates who were vying for her attention. No longer being seen as weak, Rhianne got herself into a position of power by becoming the wife of, get ready for this, Nicky's uncle. That, incidentally, was exactly how Coltrane's skull ended smashed by a 20-pound dumbbell. Thanks to Rhianne, Coltrane ended up earning a backdoor parole, as they call it, because you don't leave through the front gate when you're dead. For the sake of the story, Rhianne was still Remy, and Coltrane still had a recognizable face. While most of the pen life is bland routine, on Sunday evenings, Mikey and the crew would crowd into a cell. We'd drink Pruno that Richie got a hold of, and listen to some of the craziest stories ever told by some of the most masterful storytellers I'd ever known. Personally, I didn't care much for the hooch. It tasted like rotting garbage with a heavy fruit bouquet. But the stories were welcome. I remember watching and listening for hours on end. Spellbound as Mikey or Big Rob Hutch or whoever wove a tapestry of words in the thin air around us. They'd make us roar with laughter, clench in rage, and even slightly choke up in sadness. Some of those guys could play a man's emotions like a violin with their storytelling. Most of the time, the stories were pretty coarse, which was expected. I mean, look where they were coming from. About half the time, stories would lead into other stories for added insight, which might happen during this story. Apologies in advance for the tangents. Occasionally, the stories were downright horrifying. But when Mikey and one of his homeboys were on a roll, we could all forget ourselves and be somewhere else for a little while. One of these revered bull sessions happened spontaneously because of a lockdown. The whole pen, all five pods, and even the protective custody unit. The reason for the lockdown? There had been a murder that day. Part 2. That day, Big Rob had found out that lockdown was imminent. We had just enough time to make preparations for what was coming. Seven of us quickly herded into Big Rob's cell with our bedding, snacks from commissary, and as much gear as we could get our hands on. We were all wrapped up in our thin, scratchy blankets like convict burritos, gray blankets made of rough wool. I was about a year into my 4-year sentence, and this was my second winter in the pen. In the winter, blankets were at a premium. Upon checking into the razor wire inn, you were issued only one and one only. Men would fight for them, sometimes even kill for them. I recall that the wind was cutting through the walls really badly that night. The drafts were freezing our toes solid. Mikey and Big Rob were both sitting on the lower bunk. Coltrane and Remy had the top one. I was freezing on the floor, along with Nikki and Richie. The old cons got to snuggle into the relative comfort of the thin mattresses that covered the squeaky spring slats. The young pups had to sit on the floor. That's just the way it was. We weren't complaining out loud about it, though. We knew better than to do that. I can actually close my eyes and see Mikey and Big Rob and the rest of us sitting there in that cell that night. Pruno being poured, a joint being passed around with another on standby, ready for the stories. Big Rob kicked it off since his story was the reason for the lockdown. And this story was one of the most disgusting stories I've ever heard. Probably why I remember it so well. And probably one that you'll remember at an undesired moment of silence. Again, apologies in advance. On this day, the coroner was performing an autopsy on an inmate named Stutters. Stutters was the reason why the entire pen was on lockdown. He had been discovered in his bunk after lunch, full of ragged holes. A shiv was found in the toilet in the shower room. It had been made from plastic bags, heated to melting with a Bic, then compressed to form a sturdy, sharp little weapon. We knew the why. Stutters was a junkie, and he had been suspected of writing out various other cons to the cops in exchange for smack. Big Rob was a trustee. One of his duties was to mop the floors in the prison morgue. Big Rob told it like this. So I'm mopping up by where they keep the gurneys. Down the hall, the doors open a bit, so I can see the doc leaning over Stutters on the table. Doc's humming and singing to himself like usual. I'm smiling at how terrible his singing is. All of a sudden, the doc says, "Would you look at that?" Then he starts gagging and retching. I mean, what could get a doc gagging, I thought. Then, get this. He screams. Like for real, he screamed. He yells, "Jesus Christ, it's all over my arm." He runs out of the room and down the other hall. Now, I'm like, what's this all about? I heard him yelling for his assistants or whatever they are, the younger ones. They all come running back. I heard one of the assistants say, "You gotta be kidding me." Then, from all the way down that long hallway, the smell hits me. And it's putrid, boys. It smelled like a combination of rotting flesh and an old outhouse in August. Worst thing I ever smelled. I had to grab my nose and run out of there. Nikki shifted uncomfortably where he sat beside the toilet and asked, What was it from? Apparently, Big Rob said, lowering his voice to a husky stage whisper, Stutters was getting checked for pokes and track marks pretty regularly because he got busted so much for possession. So he started shooting it in his ass. But not like in his cheeks, you dig? I mean, right into the walls of his rectum. Shooting it right inside, man. Can you imagine that? Pretty soon, he developed a horrible abscess because of all the fecal bacteria and crap that was living up his old dirt road. The abscess got infected real bad. After a while, skinned over with a crust of white blood cells and gross stuff. It ballooned out into a giant pus bubble. That bubble got so big that it eventually closed him up. I mean, right shut. He was apparently going around like that for weeks, man, for real. Weeks. Must have hurt like hell. Now, you think Stutter told anyone about this? Of course not. So it's pretty safe to say that the doc was the first to see what Stutter's had going on. And what do docs do when they see something bubbling out? Like, he prodded at it with his scalpel, and pop! Out gushes a load of bloody green pus, full of dead bacteria and stinking like the devil's farts. We were all wrinkling our noses in disgust and shaking our heads. Mikey groaned, "Oh, that's just dirty, man," and mime throwing up all over Big Rob. But dirty was not nearly adequate for this disgusting image. Big Rob continued, "That ain't it though, my friend. That ain't it. The worst part was the fact that Stutters had been bunged up with this pus balloon for weeks or so. So, you know, it dammed up his canal. So when the doc popped that skin clog with his scalpel, all of Stutter's final meals spurted out like a high-pressure hose." For a moment or two, in stunned silence, we regarded that image. Mikey roared, "Aw, so dirty!" And despite what I just heard, despite the fact that I felt ill, I had to laugh. Coltrane and the others joined in, except Remy. Remy was filing his nails and just looked disgusted. Richie, in a slow and dreamy tone, said, "So the dog got pooped on by a corpse? And it was pus covered? Hey, do you think that happens a lot to him, or like, was that the first time?" Richie had snorted some of his pills earlier. Now he was somewhere in the clouds, floating around with a stone grin on his face. "Richie, that's just..." Mikey trailed off. "Actually, it's a good question. Want some hooch, boys?" I was just opening my mouth to say hell no, and then there was a pop. Everything was dark. The cons began yelling and hooting all across the pod, both tears on both sides. For as loud as it was, not a noise was made in our group. We could see the silhouette of the guard standing in the guard hut through the bulletproof glass, waiting to see how the cons were going to react to the power going out during a lockdown. Now, not only were we being sequestered in our cramped little cells for an indeterminable length of time, we'd also been rendered unable to properly read a book, or see your hand while playing cards, or even listen to the radio, for Christ's sake. The guard's body language was alert and poised for action. I'm pretty sure it was Robson, who was the boss on hut duty that night. Robson was a dead-eyed, square-jawed oaf, without an ounce of empathy in his whole body. What he did have was a 12-gauge shotgun with a modified choke. There's a lot of hollering and door-kicking around the pod. I can't speak on what may have been going through everyone's mind while we sat there in the dark. I thought of my prison sentence. I thought of how I've done pretty good at not adding years to it. I also prayed that no one decided tonight was the night to start something. I prayed to whoever might be listening that the emergency reaction team wasn't going to be called in. The ERT didn't mess around. Kevlar suited and anonymous in their visored helmets, they'd march into the pod and indiscriminately barge into cell after cell, busting heads and whapping out teeth with their batons. And if they shoot, the ERT shoot to kill. When your fate is in the hands of a building filled with convicts, there's no good memory that you can escape to until the little normalcy of prison life is returned. I could only think one thing. I didn't want to be given a backdoor parole. Part 3. The emergency light snapped on. Soft, red, and eerie. It made the common area of C-Pod look like a scene from an apocalyptic horror movie. But any light was more welcome than dark. All the yelling slowly died down. There was still a tension in the red gloom, though. Nicky balanced a shoe on his head. We all chuckled for a second. Coltrane started talking about the hockey game that was about to start, then abruptly shut up. We're on lockdown with no electricity. There would be no hockey game that night. Not for us. We passed a J around, still silent. And when that one was roached, we passed another. Finally, Mikey spoke up. So, who's up for some Twilight Zone tonight? I got a good one for you. You remember the last time the power went out, Hutch? Big Rob shot Mikey a sharp look, then did something very unusual for a hardened con. He shuddered. You want to tell the boys that story? I don't know, man. Mikey answered, why not? Lights are out, winds howling out there. Perfect time for it. Big Rob took a deep breath. Okay, let's do it. He cleared his throat. Boys, it's time for a scary story. Crowd around the campfire and grab a cup of this fine wine. Mikey grinned. It's more of a brandy, I think, Hutch. Mikey offered me some. Reluctantly, I accepted a styrofoam cup of the murky eye-watering stuff and steeled myself to swallow it. I was feeling a bit happier now. I've always been a fan of spooky stories. His voice stern, Mikey growled. Okay, first things first. This one is 100% true. Got it? So don't tell us that we're fibbing, or you can go have a sleepover with Robson in the hack sack. Got it, Richie grunted, then flopped over onto the floor. He was out of it. Big Rob started. This all went down a long time ago, before any of you were here. At least 12 years, I'd say. Mikey? Mikey replied, yeah, for sure. At least that long. Back when these little punks were sword fighting in the juvie showers. Big Rob continued. Me and Mikey here were both running with different crews back then. But we knew about each other. I guess I would have been about your age, he said, pointing down at me. One day, the fish tank had just been emptied out into the pod. I was playing checkers on the tier upstairs when they all came toddling in through the gate, looking like a bunch of little lost lambs down there on the range. The end of the line is the prettiest little sweet boy this whole penitentiary has ever seen. Immediately starts turning heads. Now, I don't play no grabby-grabby like Coltrane up there, but this kid, he was, I don't know, almost like an angel or something. He was too perfect. Like a picture out of a magazine, you know? Slender and fair head, teeny bopper heartthrob material. Yeah, this kid was pretty all right. And he looked like he'd be easy to punk. Big Rob took a moment to pause and force back a swig of that awful cloying pruno, a noxious blend of fermented fruit, sugar packets, and yeast. As he grimly swallowed it down, Mikey jumped in and continued the story. The new fish immediately drove the whole pod completely nuts. The wolves were losing their minds for real. The guards were looking worried. A pretty kid like that can cause a lot of hard feelings between the bulls. Hard feelings usually turn to murder. So they released the other fishes into the care of the boss at the guard hut, then hustled that pretty boy off to protective custody post haste. They kept him there for a few days, but the wolves didn't forget about him. Not for a moment. All the time they were asking the trustees who had access to PC about the kid. They're asking if the kid's lonely, if he wants a candy bar or a porno or a baggy horse or whatever the kid might possibly want. They were handing the trustees love notes to give to him. Money, weed, all kinds of gifts. Finally, a con named Hallbrook called in some heavy favors, and the hacks moved the kid back into the pod. More to the point, into Hallbrook's cell. Now I remember watching as the hacks walked that young fella across the pod and up the stairs to his new home. The kid had no expression in those wide blue eyes. None at all. Just blank. Hallbrook was a big, greasy, nasty scoundrel. You could smell him from 20 feet away. Complete psycho, that guy. Man, I tell you, watching as Brookie grinned and waited at the door of his cell for his new little bunk buddy to arrive, hell, it made me feel sorry for the kid. He was planning to do bad things to the boy. You could see it in that grin. He was going to hurt him. On that kid's face, though, no expression at all. I remember thinking that the fishy was either braver than we'd ever know, or just too stupid to understand what was in store for him. Big Rob tossed back the rest of the hooch in his Dixie cup and tried not to gag. "Ah, this is awful. Who brewed this?" His voice sounded dry and burnt. Mikey chuckled. "Our fine neighbors just down the hall, that's who. They managed to hide in the toilet tank long enough to get her finished, and holy Jesus, ain't it nasty." Big Rob held out his cup. "I think I'm going blind already." Mikey poured him another glurt of the plastic bag, taking care to make sure that the sock he was using as a filter didn't slip out and spill rotten fruit cocktail all over the bunk. I tried a sip of mine and almost retched. They all had a good hearty har at this, well, except for Richie, I guess. Richie was still laying on the floor, his eyelids fluttering and twitching. Mikey continued the story. "It broke more than a few hearts to see Hallbrook get his dirty hooks into the kids first. You would wreck that kid, destroy his soul. That was the general consensus. Come morning, they'd be rolling that kid out to infirmary. And afterward, probably sticking back in a PC for a 24-hour suicide watch. Even if he did come back to the pod again, no one would want the kid. Not after the permanent damage that Brookie was liable to do to him." With that, Coltrane remarked to Remy, "See how lucky you are?" The little Frenchman smiled down at his nails in response and kept filing them delicately with all of his concentration. Every now and then, I wonder if Remy was already planning the flirtations and indiscretions that would inevitably result in Coltrane's murder. Thinking about it now, pretty sure he was, and I can't blame him for it. Big Rob picked up the story. "I heard screaming that night. It was muffled, but I could still hear it. So did my celly. Back then, it was old Johnny Frazzini. I whispered up at him, 'Hey man, you hear that? That's awful.' Frazzini answered, real matter of fact, 'That boy, he had to know it was coming. Hey, he's too pretty to look like a girl in here in this place. He should have never come here.' As if the guy had volunteered or something. I just shook my head and told Frazzini to go to sleep. I felt so bad for that kid, you know? I think that was one of the worst nights I ever had in here." Mikey interjected, "I heard it too. I think we all did, including the bosses on duty that night. But no one went to check on him, because money makes the rules around here, not the warden or the government. It's money. I don't doubt that sick prick offered big coin for the kid, and some cold pig sold him without a second thought." Big Rob nodded sourly. "Money's a whore. That's okay though, because there's a thing called karma too. When morning came, lo and behold, Brookie ain't standing outside his cell waiting to be accounted for. Neither is the kid. A whisper popped up real quick. It spread down the lines like a breeze. Hallbrook went to the walls on the kid last night and killed him. He waiting in his cage for the ERT to come in and bust his head. The boss doing the head count paused at Hallbrook's cell. Every con craned his head to see what was going to happen next, all of us in unison. I seen the hack pull out his radio with one hand and his club with the other. Started talking real fast into his radio. Same time, he's slowly walking towards the door of Brookie's cell with his club poised to bash his skull in, like he's trying to ward someone off. He started yelling for the other hacks to get over there pronto. They all come thundering past, their keys jangling and their boots clomping. Then we all got ordered to step back into our cells with empty bellies. I heard him down there at Brookie's cell, yelling into the radios and stomping around. Then I heard someone barf. I heard the puke splatter on the tiles. We had to stay in our cells for a few hours. A lot of complaining. I remember being totally, completely pissed at Hallbrook. We'd assumed that he'd gone psycho on the new fish and cut the kid's throat while he was destroying him. And some of the emergency response guys came past wheeling a gurney. When they wheeled it past us again, you could have knocked me flat with a pea shooter. It was Hallbrook strapped in there, not the kid. I only saw him for a few seconds, but I remember that his face, it was mostly gone. Stripped right down to the bloody sinew and bones. No skin or muscles left. It was gruesome. I kind of gasped out loud. Even closed mouth, crooked nose, old Johnny Frazzini had to look twice. The only way I knew it was Hallbrook was his big greasy mop of hair. The sheet covering the body was soaked right through with his blood. I think that the rest of him had matched his face. Nikki whistled. That's hardcore, then sparked another joint. We floor dwellers had almost forgotten about the discomfort of our numb behinds and tingling feet. We'd forgotten the lockdown and the power outage. Even poor Stutters, you probably forgot about him until now. Mikey and Big Rob were telling the story, and we were living it, you know what I mean? We were right there. Mikey said, must have been 5 minutes later, the cops are rolling this crazy looking thing down the block. I'm like, what is that, to my celly? But he didn't know either. Before too long, roll it past us again. I'm like, oh, look at this. You ever seen Silence of the Lambs? The dolly cart thing that they strap Anthony Hopkins into when they're moving him? That's exactly what it was. And they got the kid strapped into it, bite mask and everything. And the kid is just soaked in blood, man. It was dripping off his clothes. I could hear it pattering on the floor behind him. Left a trail on the floor. They let us out for breakfast about a half hour after that, but by then it was almost lunch. We got served a mix of warm lunch and cold breakfast. There was more talking going on than eating, though, and everyone was asking the same thing. What'd the kid do to him? Most people thought he must have gotten hold of Brookie Shiv and somehow and then sliced Brookie up, wheeled him right down to the bone. But Brookie was a really big dude. That guy was crazy. How a skinny little fish like that could have overpowered a bad dude like Hallbrook so easy? Well, we didn't know. The joint traveled across the floor folk and handed up to the bunks. Mikey hit it hard and made that funny choking noise that older guys sometimes do when holding in a big toke, nasal and strangled. He gave Nikki the thumbs up and blasted out the smoke like a grizzled old dragon. Pretty good, Nikki. Good score. Gotta get some more of that. So yeah, the kid, he got rolled off to the hole on his Hannibal Lecter dolly. They had him on super tight lockdown. Nobody even catches a glimpse of him. They had that kid on 24-hour watch and the whole works. A couple of trustees tried asking the hacks what happened with him and Brookie. They got told to mind their own business and mop the floors. The kid was in the hole for a week, then two, then a month. All the while, ain't no one heard a peep about him getting charged with murder. There was a rumor going around that the coroner said in his report that Hallbrook had died from a heart attack. Maybe his heart seizing up was the thing that actually killed him, sure, but there wasn't any mention of the way he had been carved up like a Sunday turkey. None at all. Mikey poured himself another round of refreshment. The stink of the open bag made my eyes water. Big Rob smiled a little. In action with no real humor behind it. Well, tongues were wagging as they tend to do. Pretty soon people were saying that maybe the kid wasn't natural. That he did Brookie in with his teeth. That he ate Brookie alive, like some sort of monster. Guys were even saying that the priest paid the kid a visit in the hole and ended up leaving with tears in his eyes. Actually crying. Wouldn't say what happened. Just that he didn't want to talk to the kid never again. The priest quit working here not long after that happened, just up and quit. Mikey's iron gray beard split with a slight grin of his own. Now here's where it gets really weird. Big Rob grunted, Billy Tremont, and hauled hard on the joint, decimating it to a smoldering ember between his thick fingers. Mikey confirmed,
yeah, him, Billy Tremont. Billy Tremont was a hack who worked night shift. And when I tell you something, he was just as dirty as they come. Guy wasn't just on the take. He was the take, you know what I'm saying? He was as much a gangster as any of the boys in here. He controlled what came into the pen, and when, and who got it, and how much they got. The dude squeezed out whatever competition he had from the other cops that were playing the game. By any means. He'd set him up to get him fired, pay to have him roughed up by bikers, you name it. He's a complete jerk, but he's also real good at getting what you wanted for a price. And it's a fact that people love a mystery, especially people who ain't got nothing to do with their time. So if you guys pulled together some cash, they went to Billy, because if anyone could find answers to their questions, Billy Tremont could. Billy laughed and tells him that he'd love to take their money, but he couldn't. He couldn't do what they were asking. He says, "The weird little bastard didn't have no file, as far as I can tell. I don't know who the kid was, why he came here, or where he came from. No one does. That's the truth. The guys called Billy a liar. Call me a liar again and I'll beat the fear of God into you." Billy got serious on them. He narrowed his eyes and said to him, "You guys don't think I tried to find out for myself already, huh? Far as I can tell, the kid just sorta popped up into the fish tank out of thin air. Looks to me like everyone just kept processing him along, because no one wanted to admit that they didn't know who the kid was." To be continued.
Thank you for listening to Just the Terror with Nick Guerra. Make sure to check out True Scary Stories with Edie on Tuesdays. Give it 5 stars. And stay scared, uglies.